welcome back. This is a mini-sode, which, you know, for those not in the know, is a mini-episode of a podcast. I don't think we've ever actually recorded a mini-sode before, have we, Blaine?
No, I don't. This is definitely our first, but we want to be able to bring even more content to you guys, so I expect a few more of these here in the future.
Definitely, and I think there'll be a bunch of these going up on the often referred to not yet established Patreon feed in the next few weeks. I think we're going to be posting a lot of stuff like this when we just feel like rapping about whatever to share with all of our fans, and hopefully some of you guys will be able to jump on and chat with us and stuff too. It'll be a fun ride. So we promise there'll be announcements on the next full episode about the Patreon, and there will be, but this isn't the next full episode. This is a mini-sode, as I said. So Blaine, why did we want to have a quick little mini-sode this week?
Well, I mean, beyond just trying to get as much fantastic content for all of our wonderful listeners, we wanted to kind of celebrate our one-year anniversary and kind of keep this train rolling and give away another Blu-ray. We were lucky enough to get in touch with, I believe it's Universal, and Universal was cool enough to give us a copy to give away to our listeners and be able to kind of get the ball rolling on that side.
Awesome. So we as everybody's listening, hopefully already knows that with the most recent episode that dropped a few days ago, we were giving away a copy of Annihilation, which is I would say both of our favorite movies so far of 2018. Is that correct?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, no, Annihilation is up there. It'll probably get dethroned in the next couple of weeks, but as of right now, it's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I can't see it going below like 2 or 3 for the year for me, though. I mean, I think it's going to be way up top. But that said, we're giving a copy of that away on Blu-ray, and we're also now going to be giving away a copy of Strangers Pray at Night with the same exact contest. So this is what we're doing. You listen to this podcast, listen to that podcast, any podcast from this first year, tweet about it, Facebook about it, Instagram about it, put it up on social media, tag us, let us know. And boom, you're entered. And if you do it a couple times, I'll enter you a couple times. And then we will draw a name for each of those at the end of the week. So these are all due by Sunday. If you're listening to this after Sunday, I guess that's the 10th?
That's right.
Yeah, right. Wow, that's pretty good out of the top of my head. If you're listening to this after Sunday the 10th, those are already given away. But we hope that you still listen and still hang around, because we're going to be giving away more stuff and doing more cool stuff as we go. But one of the movies that we want to cover is Strangers Pray at Night, but we're going to first talk briefly about the first movie in this franchise. So, Blaine, I heard this movie was, and I'm using air quotes, you can't see them right now because we're on the podcast, but it was based on a true story. Blaine, how about you debunk that shit real quick before we go any further?
Okay, I love the concept of based on a true story, especially when it comes to horror movies. It's another one of my obsessions, kind of like taglines. This one comes from the writer-director, Brian Bertino. He was in his house one night, and he was all by himself, and he heard a bunch of cracks and pops around the house, got scared about it, and imagined, keyword is imagined, what it would be like if someone invaded his home. That is literally...
And therefore, it was based on a true story. He figured, well, people do have home invasions, so I guess I can say it's based on a true story.
Exactly. So, you know, it's one of those things. Ooh, wow. Since Texas Chainsaw Massacre, everybody wants to throw that on the at the beginning of their movie. They're always bullshit. Even those Conjuring movies, which come from the secret files of Ed and Lorraine Warren, it's all bullshit. It's just a fun way to kind of suck you into those first few seconds.
So, I'll go ahead and just give the brief, it's only a sentence long, description of The Strangers here on the IMDb. It says a young couple is staying in an isolated vacation home when they're terrorized by three unknown assailants. I guess that's really the whole premise of the movie, to be honest, because the story is really about this couple who's, I would say, they're kind of struggling, right? You know, you could tell that they had a bit of a rough time. I think they're at a wedding or something.
Yeah, they're coming back from a wedding. Apparently, the relationship is starting to go sideways. They're kind of, you know, in that last, you know, kind of burnout period of a long-term relationship. She doesn't really know what she wants to do. He kind of wants to, get things a little bit, you know, take things to the next level, and they're suddenly basically disrupted. And it's like this concept, I guess they always talk about, like, they kind of have this pastoral life and they have this sense of security that, you know, immediately gets pulled away from them.
Right. And I think they hint at, I don't think they go as far as to show it, but I think they hint at the fact that he proposed to her and she said no.
Yes. They do show that.
And there's like a flashback clip to it. You're right.
They kind of do those flashbacks as they kind of pan throughout the house, and you know, you listen to whatever boring songs they're listening to on their record player, and you kind of get those, you know, just the little fill-ins of the story, which, let's be honest, so much of this movie is just domestic drama.
Right. So it's so domestic drama for a while, and then it suddenly it's not domestic drama anymore because there's some fucking assholes in masks that show up.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what they are, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just people who just show up basically to torture, then kill these people. They seemingly have a process, and we're kind of hinted at that this is something that's been going on for a while, and and you know, something that they've done more than once. So, you know, you're kind of, you know, sucked into their mindset on how they're going to try to, you know, get themselves out of it, their different plans of escape, and we just kind of get this, you know, kind of back and forth where they're being toyed with by these killers that seem to give them just enough room to, you know, kind of fall into their own, you know, their own traps.
So these three bad people go by the names of what their masks look like. There's Pinup Girl, Dollface, and Man in the Mask, who's wearing basically like a burlap sack mask. Right? That's what I would call it, like a sack, you know, on his head. And you know, ultimately, they just toy with and torture these people until, well, you know, without ruining the end completely. You know, they're basically either dead or within the inch of their life. I won't say who is what and et cetera, et cetera. But I will say that I found it to be a pretty good movie when I watched it for the first time last year. So I guess it was even earlier this year, when the Scream Factory release came out, and I watched it for Synapse. I reviewed it, and I spoke pretty well of it, but ultimately I think it was just okay. Like, it was a good movie, I like it, but I don't love it. And ultimately with that, I think it's probably it suffers a little from the fact that it's probably a bit overhyped. We had a little discussion, Blaine. You had about a little theory of why it's so overhyped. What was your thought on that?
Right, and before I do that, I mean, like, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I think it's a fine movie. I don't think it's anything kind of, you know, life-changing or anything like that. But for a lot of people, this seems to be like a huge kind of like point in their in their horror movie watching, where it's like an important movie to them that really scared them. And so I started asking around people, and I realized something. Everyone who seems to be affected by it are about like 8 to 10 years younger than us. People who are, you know, currently in their mid-20s. Because I think this was one of those just kind of like, you know, like sleepover movies where, like, you know, you got together with all your friends, you watched this movie, and just creeped yourself out to no end. So I think it's like it's this first kind of wave we're getting of millennial nostalgia where you were, you know, kind of as Gen Xers, you know, or kind of on the cusp, you know, in between like we are, you know, we experience a lot of our nostalgia constantly, but I think it's kind of the first wave of, you know, of millennial nostalgia already starting to rear its head. And it's so funny because they regard it like it's, like it's this seminal film, you know, like it's The Shining or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. While, you know, for those of us who didn't really grow up with it and saw it in our mid-20s, it's like, this is a pretty good movie. You know, it's kind of corny in a lot of parts when you watch it now, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, if you grew up with this film and saw it in those teen years, it definitely has a different kind of impact on you.
Right. And I think, like, I think we likened it to perhaps in our generation, us 30-somethings, that we likened the same thing to the when you're 13, 14, 15 years old at, like, you know, a friend's sleepover party for their birthday or some crap, and we probably popped in something like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, and those were seminal for us. Although, ultimately, I think one of the things is we watch those with our nostalgic glasses, so we probably hold them up higher than maybe they should be, too. So kind of an interesting conversation to have down the road about maybe the sacred cows of our generation as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because every generation has, and there's so many things that we hold on to that you know, we're viewing just through this lens of not even reality. I mean, you're taking into account, like, what you were doing at the time, you know, what your view of the world was at that, you know, at that stage in your life, where you're not really getting a good account of what you actually watch. It's more or less kind of who you were at that time, which is fun, because we talk about that a lot on this show with these movies, especially when it comes to things like, you know, things like exploitation films and the like. You know, a lot of times you have something that's attached to you during that. So it's kind of fun to kind of look at another generation, especially a younger generation's film.
Yeah, it's always fun to rip on millennials, right? In that the case, no, I'm just fucking with you guys, because you guys are probably most of the people listening to this are millennials. But if you are, we love you. Don't worry, we're both cuspers. We're still kind of millennial, and we're kind of Gen X. We're fucking weirdos. So anyway, but with that, you know, ultimately, I think what we're both saying here is that we both think it's a good movie. It's not life changing for us, but we get how it could have been for someone else. You know, I definitely think that a lot of times there's certain movies that come for a certain time that are very effective. This movie has a reputation for being more gruesome than it is. But at the same time, I see what's really scary about it, because ultimately, what is scarier than somebody coming to your place, your home, your safe space, and fucking you up?
Oh, dude, that is still a scary idea, because, like, that's one thing I want to give credit to the movie. It is a scary idea, especially if you're like us and you've got, like, families. And, you know, you're thinking, you have to play out in your head, like, how am I going to defend myself? Because if you've never had that thought process of how do you protect your family in the middle of the night because you drank too much coffee and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you see weird people walking around or something, like, you're lying. But because I've done it a million times, I'm like, how am I going to defend everybody? You know, so I think it is fun to kind of use horror from that side of, like, you know, what would you do? And that movie shows, I mean, and sometimes where it kind of succeeds is showing where your best intentions, you could be doing a whole bunch of dumb shit because you're just scared. And I think that their reactions and what they do aren't necessarily bad ideas. They're just poorly made decisions that are made by people that are very scared.
Well, and think about it. When you're in a traumatic situation like that, you're not going to make the best decisions. And that's one of the things that I always tell people when they say, oh, why would they do that in a horror movie? It's like, have you ever been faced with, you know, an axe in your face? Yeah, you're going to act a little bit differently than you would if you were, you know, sitting on a couch watching a movie, per se. You know? Yeah. So ultimately, like, I don't have any problem with the things they do as far as it being realistic. I actually think the movie's quite realistic in a lot of ways, which is what makes it scary. I will definitely agree with that. And, you know, and my biggest complaint about the film really has to do with the marketing. And it's one of those movies where it is written and directed in such a way where it has a really nice gut punch moment, except that gut punch moment was taken away completely by the marketing that literally had the line from that gut punch moment on the poster. So, you know, if you really want to see this movie and you never have before and you've never looked at the poster, don't, because it'll actually make the movie much more effective. I hear about people trying to avoid trailers. Most of the time you don't try to avoid a poster, though.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, usually posters don't have the entire, like what would you say, like, the entire, like, motto of the film, the entire point of the movie.
Right, which isn't actually said until late in the film when it actually should be a really good gut punch. And unfortunately, I'm not going to throw it out there right now because there might be someone out here who's like, oh, I haven't seen The Strangers. And this is just a mini-sode. We're not getting super deep, so I won't ruin it. But I will tell you, that's probably what killed the movie most for me. I think it probably would have been a much more effective film for me had I not seen that marketing. So whoever was in charge of marketing, fuck you. All right.
Yeah. Hey, well, we're 10 years later and we're still talking about the fucking movie, so they didn't do that bad.
I guess you're right. Well, and one of the things you just brought up that I think transitions well into the second movie is the how something like a home invasion hits home or hits you hard when you are older and you actually are in charge of taking care of a family, as you were, you know, talking about all those things that go through your head. The second movie, it's not just a couple, it's a family of four who gets attacked, which ups the ante in a way for me, because I am the head of a family of four. Now, don't tell my wife I said I'm the head. She probably runs everything, let's be honest. But I am one of the adults. I am the one who is 6'3", 300 plus pounds, so I would think I would try to be the protector, you know. But when you're in a moment like this, it's like, holy shit, you know. And so thinking about it on that side is what messes me up the most. And I think one of the things that makes the second one maybe a little more effective than the first for me is being able to relate to being a parent. So before I continue with that train of thought, Blaine, what is the second Strangers movie about?
The Strangers, Pray at Night. A sequel put out a decade after the last film was made that no one asked for, but we got anyway. It's about a family of four. They're staying at a secluded mobile home park for the night while they're on their way to take their awful little daughter to some sort of school for bad kids sort of thing. Yep. And then they, you know, once they get there, everybody's missing. They start getting stalked and hunted by those three same people. And we start up kind of a whole new adventure of cat and mouse.
So, again, I don't want to ruin things about this movie. So I'm not going to jump to exactly what happens. But I explained to Blaine when I watched this movie just yesterday, the thing that bothers me most is the last 10 minutes of the movie. It doesn't play by its own rules. The movie is very realistic, and it's bloodier, gorier, and everything from the first film, but it plays in a real world, you know, just like the first movie does, until suddenly we're talking about freaking reincarnated Jason, and that's when I have problems. So up until that moment, the movie had me, and at that moment, I literally yelled at the screen, "Oh, fuck no." And I'm pretty sure I said it at least 10 more times. And I described this particular segment of the movie to my wife because she will never watch this movie. She doesn't do home invasion very well, and she doesn't do gore very well, two things that are what this movie basically is. And, she just cracked up the whole time because I kept going, it was one of those things for me. But if I erase that from the film and I take that last 10 minutes off and I end it where I think it should have ended, I actually think I might like the movie better than the first one. I don't know. I feel like it ups the ante. It does the gore well, and it has some legitimately masterfully shot scenes, like some fight scenes and things that go on with scored to like 80s hits, like easy listening 80s hits, which makes it even more bizarre and fun. I don't know. Blaine, I think you liked this movie even more than I did. You were a pretty big fan, right?
Yeah, like I really enjoyed this film. Upon my first viewing, I think I liked it a lot more. I can kind of see a few, you know, see through the cracks a little bit more the second time. But, no, I like this movie because it's sort of this, I don't know, it kind of takes on this really dumb and more of an action movie side, where the first one is all tension. This one plays on the fact that they basically have a whole hunting ground to take on this family. And I think it plays out really well. It goes way over the top. The kills are way bloodier. It's way more, it's way more exploitation than the first one. Where the first one, the deaths are very real. They're impactful. In this one, I feel like we're just kind of moving on, man. This is a murder movie.
So, yeah, you're right. I said that this plays by rules of being in the real world. And I still stand by that, but you're right that it's exploitation-y and over the top. Like, but it's still realistic, just not like the first one. It's very like intentional to build this relationship and really work on it not being over the top. And you're right, this one is tonally a lot different.
This movie's got explosions straight out of a fucking Schwarzenegger movie. Like,
Well, the biggest explosion that happens is part is the beginning of the problem I have with
them. Well, okay. So let's be honest. All right, see, and those aren't my problems, and I think you and I, we kind of differ on what we think about the family. Like I really hate those kids. The only person I like is Christina Hendricks, just because I think she's super foxy and I like seeing her in movies. It's very, very basic. I like looking at her, so I give her kind of the benefit of the doubt. But
you
I
have a
I
bit of that. You have a bit of a MILF complex. Let's be honest.
I guess so. But you are aware that MILFs are just age-appropriate women for us now, right?
This is true, but, like, you know, I mean, to be fair, she's age-appropriate. She's only a couple years older than us, yeah, but still.
She's, like, the same age as us.
I think she's, like, 40, dude, okay? I think she's 40, which, I mean, I'm 36, so I guess that is age-appropriate. I'm just trying to give you shit.
But
don't try to shrug off the fact that I'm right, that you do have a MILF complex. She's just not part of it.
No, she's not part of it. She's just...
I'm thinking more of like your obsessions with people like Pam Grier.
Oh yeah, well that's just because those are just the women that I maybe came of age looking at, became
Correct.
A man, but became a man, or at least became a masturbating boy.
Yes.
I like this movie because it's a little more brain dead and doesn't take itself seriously. I love the way they use soundtrack to basically kind of get away with some pretty tongue-in-cheek kind of moments that I think play out well, because the killers in this one kind of have their own soundtrack that they bring with them, and it plays out just so well. And I think it's more or less kind of these framing of these little murder set pieces that I have fun watching. But granted, the stuff that I don't like about the first movie kind of happens again in this one, and it's done with lesser actors with a lesser script. So a lot of
they're definitely lesser actors. Yeah, definitely lesser actors.
So so the domestic drama that is at least remotely interesting and relatable in the first film, in this movie, all that stuff is like, just shut up and get to murder. I use this movie pass to see a murder movie, get to the fucking murders. But I think with the excitement and, I know I like the ending more than you do, but with that excitement, I really didn't think about how much domestic drama was in this one, because it goes so crazy at the end that when I was rewatching it, I was finding myself kind of checking the clock at the beginning, because I was like, let me get back to the mayhem. Overall, I think
you're the mayhem guy in this one, and I actually wanted to see a little bit of the domestic drama thing. I see what you're saying. And you're right. This movie is definitely much more of an exploitation film, and I think where you might have liked it more the first time, I might end up liking it more the second time going into it looking for an exploitation. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because I would liken this more to more to an action movie than a horror movie. It's kind of like when you look at movies like The Last Rambo. Yes, it has horror movie violence in it, but it's an action movie. And I still think that this film is more of an action film, more aligns with the last couple of Purge movies, where it's more or less being hunted.
It could very well have been a Purge movie if you just changed it and said, oh, this occurs on Purge night. Literally, everything else could be the same.
and gave them better masks, because
their masks are pretty shitty.
Yeah, the Purge does masks the right way.
It really does, which we're definitely going to have to come back and talk Purge later this summer, because the new one's coming out, and I'm pretty stoked on that. So.
Oh, yeah, and anyone who knows me knows my opinion on those movies. I love them. I know they're big corporate studio horror, but I think they do them right.
They're big corporate studio horror that still only spends $5 million a film. So
no, man. They spent $13 million on this new one, man. Big money.
Wow, they jumped over 10. That's like huge for a Blum film, man. Blum doesn't ever hit 10. He's like, that's hitting the risk-reward question mark, Oh, my God. But I guess it's not when he's going to make 150 off of it. So.
And let's face it, when you've got Trump as the president, it makes those movies just sell themselves.
They literally just play Trump ads, and I think they call it the trailer.
Yeah, they did.
There's literally a Make America Great Again hat in the trailer.
Well, it's a Make America Purge Again hat. So,
but then I'm pretty sure. Well, anyway, we don't have to get into that movie right now. But you're right; they're definitely intentionally going after that. And I mean, even went after that a little bit too. But I definitely think this is a kind of movie that if you're a Purge fan, you haven't watched the Strangers movies, you should probably watch them both, especially the second one because it's got that bigger exploitation tone to it. I can see also how people who grew up with Strangers as a Sacred Cow hate this movie.
Oh yeah,
because it's completely different. And I guess to a certain extent that's probably the same kind of things that happen with like Halloween, like people who like love the early Halloween movies, and then like, you know, the next one that comes out is like, you know, starring Busta Rhymes, and they're freaking pissed off as hell. Which I actually think the LL Cool J and Busta Rhymes Halloween movies are probably my favorite ones. in that series, so I'm probably the wrong one to talk to, but you know what I'm saying, like it definitely feels like someone took that sacred cow and cut out a big steak and threw it on the grill. So and I get why that would bother people. I mean, one of our friends who's been on the podcast, and or actually he will be on the podcast, we were on his podcast, Josh, who writes for the site and runs 50,000 podcasts and things these days, Josh Berkey, he obviously, being a decade younger than us, is fits into the category that this is a sacred cow kind of movie for him, the first one, and he loathes, like hates the second one. So I completely get that.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, and I think it's like that with any movie, especially when you wait this long to do a sequel. I mean, at what point are you? They might as well just call it something different, because you wait 10 exactly. years and all you're doing is just cashing in a name so. But hey, you know what? In their faces, if we got to put up with all this weird marketing and our entire like first 20 years of our lives being tossed back at us every 3 or 4 years in the form of, you know, Ninja
it's
Turtle
their
movies.
Turn. It's millennials'
yeah, it's their turn.
Turn.
In your fucking face. Yeah, whatever you guys watched. In your fucking face.
In all seriousness, guys, I just want to say thank you again for listening, because I'm going to wrap us up. You want to know why? Because we're already almost at a half hour, and pretty soon it won't be considered a mini-sode. And we want to keep ourselves fresh for later this week when we record a full episode for you guys. But thanks for listening. It's been a full year. Please share 1, 2, 20 of our – I don't even know if we have 20. I think we have 20 – of our podcasts. And when you do that, I'll enter you into our magic hat of names, and we will pick two out. And the first one will get to choose their choice of Annihilation or Strangers Pray at Night, and the second one will get to get the other one. So that's pretty damn good. I mean, you're going to get a sweet-ass movie. So honestly, even though neither of us loved either of the Strangers movies, we liked them both. The Pray at Night is a lot of fun, and I think that at the very least, you're getting a free Blu-ray. So, I mean, all you got to do is a tweet or a Facebook post. That's it, you know. And we know we're not as cool as some of you young millennials. We're not on, like, Snapchat and all those other, you know, I don't even know what the other ones are these days. If you want us to get on those platforms, please tell us. We'll create accounts and we'll start chatting with you on those. But we're old men, so we really do appreciate all the love that you guys have given us this first year, and thanks again to Strangers Pray at Night for hooking us up and sponsoring a quick little mini-sode and a contest.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, just echoing the same things as Justin here. Thank you guys so much for this first year. We have a blast doing this, but it's nice to know that we're not just screaming into the void and that you guys are listening. So, like I said last episode, let us know, you know, if there's stuff that you want us to cover, if there's things you want me to stop talking about, like dirty old man porn and all that stuff.
To be fair, you've been pretty good about that lately.
I have been, yeah, yeah. Been.
Well, and part of it's me. I usually get you going on it, so I'm sorry.
So, but no, thank you guys so much, and we can't wait to hook you guys up with some cool movies and some more giveaways here in the future. But until next time, we'll see you folks. Peace.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely. Never coming around.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your
Turn
eyes.
Around.
Wise.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit helpless, and I'm lying like a child in your arms.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit angry, and I know I've got to get out and cry.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, but then I see the look in your eyes. Total eclipse of the heart.